The following program is sponsored by Friends of Life Outreach International.
And I had been out of ministry for quite some time. I swore I would never do ministry again. I was bitter at God. I was angry at God. God had failed me. I felt as though, quite honestly, God had stabbed me in the back.
And so, coming up on Life Today, Jay Lauder explains how his life was transformed by an encounter with God in a most unexpected place.
And it was my launch back into where I never should have left in the first place, the place that God had called me to be. I was back home.
Thank you so much, and welcome to Life Today. I'm James Robinson. Betty and I have an evangelist with us. Now, I think most of you know James Robinson is an evangelist. I remember, Betty, I used to just think, how can somebody named James Robinson be an evangelist? I didn't even have a catchy name. You know, it wasn't Billy Graham, Billy Sunday, you know, something like that. I just thought, and I didn't even spell my name right, because everybody was going to call me Robinson forever.
Robinson.
They call you Robinson. Don't they go looking for you on the computer when they need to find you, and they can put Robinson?
I even spell I can't spell.
Our children went through all of it. So, and I've got an evangelist. Now, he has a pretty neat-sounding name. His name is Jay Lauder. Now, that sounds like a preacher. Louder. I mean, that'll work for an evangelist, and he really is blessed. Matter of fact, some of my own former advanced people who set up crusades all over the country began telling me years ago, he can preach. He can preach like you. He can preach better than you. He's really good. And he sent me tapes, and I listened to him, and I think, well, yep, he's probably better than me. I'm not going to listen to that anymore. It really is good. And I want you to welcome Jay Lauder, who's been with us before, but welcome him back to Life Today. Jay Lauder. Jay, good to see you. And you're preaching in stadiums and coliseums, and you're preaching. You just came back from Canada, and you've been all over the East Coast, which sometimes a lot of evangelists don't go to the East Coast, but you're being received everywhere you go.
Well, we've been blessed. We really have. It's been fortunate. We want to not just be confined to one area of the country or one specific place, but we want to take the message across all boundaries, go everywhere we can.
Well, God's blessed you, and you really do have a great gift. I want to just say to all of you who are watching, you want someone to come into the church or your community or your area and help you win people to Christ. Jay has a gift, a touch, an anointing of God. If these viewers say, well, maybe we just want to check him out. We want to know where to go to find out how could we talk to people who've had Jay, how could we invite him, where would they go if they went to a website?
JayLauder.com.
All right. Would they find that somebody else said something nice about you on your website?
Well, I hope so. I hope so,
now,
yes.
If you're not putting those nice things on there, let another evangelist tell you, it'd be good to do that. But can they can communicate with your office and find out about your schedule and if they can get you to come, right?
Oh, absolutely. We use all social media, and there's plenty of references and videos and things where people can get connected and see what we do and where we've been and where we're going.
And you enjoy being in the schools, too, speaking to the
teenagers. I
still
do that. Yes, I do. I love being connected with the student culture and having a pulse on what's going on in the community, yeah.
How do those students receive you when you go in, and how do you work around the situation of, say, don't talk about religion in school? What do you do?
Well, it's social and moral issues. So we deal with suicide, violence, STDs, abuse, addiction. Those things. We don't go in and talk about God or talk about Jesus or any type of religious platform. We just go in and talk about the issues students are facing.
It's only because you're limited in that. I mean, you'd like to go in and talk about
it. Oh, sure. Yeah, I'd love to be able to.
You're respecting the wishes of the schools, and you're understanding the parameters they have to work in. You understand the difficulty of their situation, which is really, in many instances, I think, quite tragic. Now, you've got a book that has an interesting title, Midnight in Aisle 7. Now, I think this may be your story, but in the book, you tell numerous stories of people. Will you give me just a little insight into why you wrote the book, and then maybe tell us about what you mean by Midnight in Aisle 7?
Sure. I wrote the book because in years of traveling, we meet so many people who have so many different issues, and we want those people to realize that there are other people who have gone through what they've gone through and have found a way of escape. The book is filled with people that have been through everything from addiction to abuse to abandonment to divorce to attempted suicide. The whole gauntlet is there. But I've just realized over the years that you're typically only as sick as your secrets. And we have a tendency to conceal those areas of weakness and struggle in our life. And if people can find a pivot point of somebody that they connect with who has walked down that same valley, who has been in that same ditch, that it can be a way of healing, a way of restoration, and a way of escape. And so the book really is just a myriad of different stories of people from different ages, from different walks of life, who have all found that pathway of hope.
Well, I think that's really good because a lot of people think, you know, when the enemy comes and he really pounds on you, you know, you think, I'm the only one that's struggling or going through what I'm going through. So it's good. It should be encouraging to people to read the different testimonies and stories that you have in the book to really, probably everybody can relate to one of the stories.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of a buffet approach. I mean, it is true life people that I've met. Of course, my story's in there as well, but it really just is kind of a round table where regardless of where you've been, you're going to find within the book a way of hope. And that's really the purpose. That's really why I wrote the book. Just after being on the road for years and meeting thousands and thousands of people, there's one common denominator, and it's people are hurting. And the common equation for this is taking light into darkness. It's being able to overcome difficulty. And so that's really why I wrote the book. It's taking that light into the dark places.
All right, the title, Midnight in Aisle 70, you said you tell your story. Is that what Midnight in Aisle 7 references?
Yes, it is a portion of my story. There was a time in my life when I was very bitter at God. I walked away from God, like a lot of people who are probably watching the program today. Maybe they've had a bad experience in church, or they feel like God has forsaken them and He's no longer there. Well, that's really where I was. And so in this limbo time, me and Missy, my wife, walked in Walmart just to do some shopping. We're kind of night owl people anyway. And I was walking down an aisle, and it sounds rather strange, but it is what it is. I walked past a guy I'd never seen, I'd never met, but I sensed something about him. And because of already having became a Christian years earlier, I just walked past him and said, "Sir, excuse me, there's two things I'd like to ask you. I know we've never met. Number one, are you a Christian? Number two, are you in ministry?" And he about passed out. He said, "Actually, I'm both. How did you know?" And I said, "I don't know. I just walked past you, and there's something about you. There's something that emanates from you." And he actually was a youth minister. And I had been out of ministry for quite some time. I swore I would never do ministry again. I was bitter at God. I was angry at God. God had failed me. I felt as though, quite honestly, God had stabbed me in the back. And so through all this, he invited me to come speak to his church. I had been out of ministry for years. And the long and short of it, it was the first time that I operated in my gift, used the gift, the calling that God had given me, that I had walked away from. I was working a secular job for a Fortune 500 company. And I went to this little small town in Texas, spoke to his youth group, thought no one would show up. And there were 66 students that night that said, "I want to know Christ and receive Jesus as their Savior."
Right.
And it was my launch back into where I never should have left in the first place, the place that God had called me to be. I was back home.
Yeah. You were turned around and you stepped into your new journey. And
right.
That was to operate, as you said, in your gift, your anointing to preach. And my friends who've heard you, and I've heard you preach, you have a wonderful gift to communicate. You have a wonderful gift to invite people to come and commit their life to Christ, not to religion.
That's right.
As a matter of fact, you make it very clear that being associated or affiliated with some kind of religious group does not make you a part of the family of God.
That's right.
And we need to have a relationship with Christ, and you make that so clear, people see it, and they come, and they respond. And that's, I think that'll continue because people are hurting, and Christ is the answer, and you can present that. Now, you point out different situations. Give us some examples in the book.
Well, we have everything. I guess the story that probably would stand out the most for me is an incredible story of forgiveness. Because I think at the end of the day, really, that's what everybody's looking for. It's forgiveness. Some people, I think, don't even know that. But it was one encounter that I had with an individual who his wife had been unfaithful to him. She had ran off with another man, got pregnant with another man's child. And yet he took her back in. She left again with another man. And he waited faithfully on her for several years until finally she actually came back home. He adopted the child that was not his and made that kid as his own. It's one of the most incredible stories of forgiveness I've ever seen or experienced. When I initially met the man, I thought that maybe there was something mentally wrong with him. How could someone give that level of forgiveness? But truly, it's a great representation of what God offers for the people that are even watching television. In many ways, we are that woman. We've been unfaithful to God. We have cheated on God. We have substituted God for other things. But yet, in spite of that, like this man continued to wait for his wife, God has been waiting for people that are watching today, waiting for them to just take a step to come back home. And so I think, again, there's a lot of different stories, but if I had to pinpoint one, it would be that.
Have you had trouble forgiving and dealing with people in your own life or your own family that make it difficult for you to forgive and deal with maybe their choices and practices, something you've had to learn?
Absolutely. I think at some level, we all struggle with forgiveness of others. But I also think that part of the reason for that is because the root issue is we struggle with forgiving ourselves. I think the difficulty in forgiving others is really just a mirror of what's already going on. It's difficult, I think, for many people to believe that God really forgives. I mean, we say that, okay, God forgives and washes away sin, but do we really believe that? I think many people struggle that God could actually accept them. I was in speaking on death row just a few months ago with some of the criminals who've committed some of the most horrendous crimes fathomable. But yet I could honestly look those men in the face and say, regardless of what you've done, even though you may have committed this gross crime or murder, I could look at them and honestly say, God really will accept you just the way you are. He will truly not just forgive you and give you a pass to eternity, but He will heal you here and now. And it's not something, again, that's said. It's something that I personally experienced and I've seen. And to see men who have nothing left to do but wait on death and to see them ingest the forgiveness of God, there's no substitute.
Well, it's really important if they don't look at it as a pass out of prison. They're going to pay their debt. But if they see that I can be freed from my past and my failures, and they can be, and I can have life now here where I am, I can be a free person even while I'm incarcerated or I'm being held for a crime I committed. And they do have that peace, right, that passes understanding.
And also, I think it's not only a blessing to the person or someone that has maybe wronged you and you forgive them, but what about what it does to you on the inside? There comes a healing too.
No doubt.
Because we can get stopped dead in our tracks if we have unforgiveness in our heart. It can just almost paralyze our walk with the Lord.
Right. And that's such a great point because I think many people, that is the biggest barrier between them and God. They understand the concept of Jesus coming and dying for their sins. They understand even biblical truth, but yet there is a wall between them and God, and they don't understand why that wall is there, but it's because of unforgiveness. It's a key issue. It literally affects emotions, it's spirituality, every aspect of life, mental health.
You faced a crisis, a weather phenomenon that was very destructive in Wichita Falls years ago.
That's right.
That required a decision. Tell us about it.
Yes. I was 13 years old, and one of the worst tornadoes in the history of the United States came rolling through our city. It became known as Terrible Tuesday. Many, many lives were lost. The tornado was on the ground, went through Texas and Oklahoma, demolishing lives, past, present, futures. We did what you're not supposed to do. Technically, you're supposed to stay in your home, but my father decided that we would try to outrun the tornado. Now, even though that's not conventional wisdom, it's a good thing that my father decided that. I believe God actually led him to do it because our home was destroyed, and the room that we were supposed to get in, that centrally located room, was annihilated. But when we left the home, engulfed in this major F4, F5 tornado, we came to a place in the road, a T in the road, where you had to go right or left. But when you're in the midst of a tornado, it's almost like being engulfed in smoke. And there was really no way to know which way to go. But the decision that my father would make at that moment, whether to turn right or left, would literally determine whether his family and he lived. Again, they couldn't have known that in that split second moment, but that's how crucial that decision was, which direction that they were going to go. My father made the decision to take a left. Of course, turning right would have literally taken us right into the heart of the storm. There's no way we could have survived had we have turned right. But we turned left, and that one decision saved my father, my mother, me, and my two sisters. The power of one decision to save or destroy a life, it's amazing.
I thank God. Don't you thank God his dad made the right decision, that God led them to safety? I think it's really, though, the real importance of this story is that throughout our lives, we face those critical moments of decision, and we are going to choose many times whether we live or die. Now, that may not mean literally, physically at the moment, but whether or not we really live or whether we merely exist, whether we make a decision that leads to life now with meaning, with someone to walk through the storms with you, through the valleys, even of the shadow of death, or whether you'll walk it alone and then spend eternity separated from the life and the love that God freely offers. If you'll make the right decision, and that is to decide to follow Jesus, to give him your life. He gave his life for you to give you forgiveness that Jay has talked about, to give you a new beginning, all things new, the past blotted out, things that you may be able to remember. God says, I remember them no more. They're covered by the death and sacrifice of my son. Would you make that decision today? Let me tell you something. It not only changes eternity, and it does, but it changes right now and everything that happens in this life. Would you just ask Jesus right now and bow your head, Jesus, come into my life. I give you my life, however broken, however needy, however desperate, I give you me, and I receive you. I receive you, forgiveness and life, in Jesus' name. If you made that decision, I'd love to send you a book titled Knowing God as Father. I'd just like to tell you how I came to know him and give you some simple Bible studies. You call the number and say, I just prayed with James. Or you may want to call and say, would you pray with me? I want to know Jesus. I want to make the right decision. Jay, I really thank you for your testimony. And the book, Midnight in Aisle 7, can they get that on your website too or in the bookstores, either way?
They can get it in bookstores. They can get it on my website. It's available online. But most any major retailer has it.
Well, I hope you'll get it and see those stories. And Jay, we're doing something I know you like. We're helping people that feel like nobody ever noticed. I want you to just stop and think. What if this were me? Would you want something to happen to change your circumstances? I want to show you the truth, and I want to show you what love can do. Watch closely.
Imagine, if you will, that you're living somewhere in the world and you have no clean water sources available to you or your family. You would not be alone. The reality is that there are nearly 850 million people who do not have access to water that is safe to drink. Statistics tell one story: the suffering and heartache of seeing a child die because of a waterborne illness tells another.
You know, I have seen diseases. I have seen children with sores and malnourishment. I've sat with a mother while she wept over her children that she lost, and she lost them because of this right here, contaminated water.
Now, imagine if you could help put an end to the misery and suffering that these precious families live with, simply because they don't have access to clean water. Imagine drilling a water well
that provides fresh drinking water for their entire village. Then imagine the lives of precious children that can be saved if a water well becomes a reality.
Boy, that touches my heart. I like watching those children play in the water. And you may wonder, well, do they waste the water like that? Betty, they are telling me, the missionaries, wherever we go, that they only let them come and splash around and play in the water like that when the people who gave them the water well come. So let everybody see how happy they are. But that's the life. That's the reason they're able to play, because the water gave them
life. Absolutely, James. And you think, oh, children, they need toys, they need this, they need that. The best gift we can give them is the fresh water to save their lives. It's a simple solution, but it's going to take all of us to make it happen. And I hope you will help us in that.
I would just look at those little children, almost look like a schoolyard of little kindergarten age and elementary age kids. And chances are that might have been most of the children that age in that particular village. Many times a village of 1,000 people have never in their lives had any clean water, and they've been burying their children, their grandchildren, many of them dying when they're 2, 3, and up to 5 years of age. That's when most of them die of infant mortality, and it's contaminated water and diseases that come from it. Well, we're able to change that. And you know, you are, I don't get to look you right in the eyes. I mean, you look at me and you look at Betty, and I know she's easier to look at than me. She always is. But I wish I could look in your eyes. You might think, no, you don't want to see me. I tell you, I would too. I would like to, because if you watch life today, I think you watch it for the primary reason of seeing life, hearing about life, and giving life. I believe that our viewers love to share life. I believe you like to put a smile on someone's face. I believe you like to give a mother hope for her child, grandparents hope for their grandchildren. You want to light up people's lives with the love of God. Now think about this. When we give people water, we're giving them water for life, but it's because of the water of life, and we tell them about that water, and they want to know, because they've already seen up close and personal the love of God expressed through not only the missionaries, but expressed through people like you who say, we'll help the missionaries. We'll help those children. Now, here's our goal this year. 500 water wells. For a ministry, a single ministry, that's a lot. 500 water wells. $4,800 a piece. Could you drill one? We have people who say, every year, we drill one. Some have said, I've been asking God to let me. Now I can't. I've asked all our viewers to pray that God would let every one of you drill a water well, because then we would expand the goal way beyond anything we've imagined. The need's there. We just need the resources. You may not be able to drill a well. If you can, I believe you will. Dial the number, take your bank card, or write a check. Let us know. I'm giving a well, or I'm giving a portion of the well. 1,200. Three people join me. 2,400. Somebody join me. At some level, you can give. But remember this. This is where most of the support comes. $48. Yes, a gift of $48. 10 people water the rest of their life. 144, 30 people. There's a level at which you can help. We have some beautiful gifts that we want to send you. I call them the witness pens. The names of God, the fruit of the Spirit, the names of God, Bible study, majesty, tremendous. We have the commemorative bronze, living water. We want to send these to you to say thanks, but I can promise you the villages, the children, their families, they're going to be saying an eternal thank you, because they're going to see the love of God. They're going to hear about it. And I believe they're going to experience it. Please dial that number or go online, lifetoday.org, and make the gift God put on your heart. Please do it now, and I thank you for it.
Every day, millions of children are forced to make a dreadful choice. Drink filthy, polluted water filled with deadly disease, or die from thirst. No child should ever be faced with this decision. The good news is there is a solution. Mission Water for Life is one of the most exciting and viable demonstrations of God's love in the world today. Suffering can end because clean water changes everything. With your gift today, we can establish and drill 500 new water wells for remote villages in over 12 different nations. Your gift of $24 will help provide clean water for 5 people. A gift of $48 will help provide for 10 people. $72 will impact 15 people. And $144 will help provide fresh, clean, disease-free water for 30 people for a lifetime. With your gift, be sure to request Majesty, an inspirational new fully illustrated book that will help you discover the promises behind the many names of God. With your gift of $100 or more, be sure to also request the Names of God pen set, custom crafted with the various names of God and the gifts of the Spirit. Also, please prayerfully consider a gift of $1,200 to help provide water for 250 people, or a gift of $4,800 to help sponsor a complete well. And be sure to request the limited edition 50th anniversary bronze sculpture, Living Water. Please call, write, or make your secure gift online today.
I've loved traveling all around the world with Life Outreach, being able to tell the stories of so many people. In many of the places that I've gone into, many children that I have heard stories about have died because of the water that they're drinking. And it really breaks your heart when you go into these places and you hear such stories and you think, what can I do? And this is my heart's cry to you to say, we need you. We need to continue to drill more and more and more wells so it will give water for life to thousands of more people just like this all over the world. Please, won't you help us? Go to the phone, go online, and help us bring life through water to these people.
You're going to love these, as I call them, witness pens. This is the one with the fruit of the Spirit. It's more of a pewter. This is the one, Betty, that's bright, very bright, and these are the names of God. They're wonderful pens, be very effective. And we want to just say thank you. I want to mention again, Jay Louder and Midnight in aisle 7. This is not only his story, but the story of many people perhaps like you and how they found the answer. And there is Jay's website if you'd like to access material there from him, or perhaps invite him to come to your community and preach. I can promise you, he'll deliver Jesus in the Word and in the power of the Spirit. You'll be blessed. Would you say thanks to Jay Louder for being here, Jay? Bless you, man. Do a good work. Do the work of an evangelist, okay?
All right, I will.
And we're going to keep doing it, too. Thank all of you so much for your encouragement and your support, and thanks for helping us share water.
Tomorrow, award-winning author Sherry Rose Shepherd shares openly about the devastating collapse of her family.
I've watched how God does not waste pain.
Life Today is made possible by the supporters of Life Outreach International. Your gift will be used exclusively for the exempt purposes of Life. The ministry features specific outreaches as examples of the programs it supports and conducts. Gifts are considered to be without restriction as to use unless explicitly stipulated by the donor. The ministry is a member of the ECFA.